numbers told the story they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Monday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, however you take us in. We appreciate it. It's Gil Alexander. It is Wyatt Tomchek in for the vacationing Kelly Bidlin. How you doing, man?
I'm great. Wait, Kelly's vacationioning?
I think
he just told me to save his seat for like 5 minutes.
No, it's going to be 5 days. You missed that. You missed that one.
I missed that, but I'm glad to be with you. I haven't seen you in a while.
I know, man, because you've been away.
I have.
I'm going to blame it on you. What are you, at Circa most of the time?
Yes, when producer Britton Hess unfortunately left us to go move to L.A. Still writing for us for all his UFC content. He's filling in for prime time, so I get to sleep in a little bit.
You were just with your family, and you would you like to share what you do as part of that trip with your family?
Yeah, so most of my family on my dad's side, they live in Wisconsin. So I go up every year. Now, my uncle owns Two Ace Hardware's there. And since I was like 10 years old, I've always worked there. And it's just kind of like a little fun
thing. So you're like helping people find the proper light bulbs and the proper paint shade and all that.
You know, well, don't ask me specific questions because then I'll be like, I'm going to get somebody more. Or I got to give the life story of when they get a little agitated with me. I'm like, look, I'm from Vegas. I'm the owner's nephew. I'm just, you know,
you
helping
do that
out.
Thing. Well, I'm glad you could be producer number whatever here, a little interim producer on the show. We appreciate it. And by the way, you're destroyed by mosquitoes. People should know why it starts scratching himself. It's not anything else. It's just mosquitoes. It's happening to them.
Got like 20 of them.
Yeah. This is for a show in the middle of June. Can we call it the middle of June? Whatever. Towards the middle end of June, if you will. One of the sneakiest, best kind of days of the sports calendar. It is that good. NHL Game 7 Stanley Cup Final tonight between the Edmonton Oilers. I'll do this again now. It's driving me crazy. Edmonton Oilers and Florida Panthers, and Edmonton trying to create all kinds of history. All kinds of history, not only being the first Canadian team to win since 1993, but of course coming back from a 3-0 deficit, which has only been done four other times in the history of the NHL playoffs. And only once before in the history of the Stanley Cup Finals. That is what they're trying to do. Jake Hahn will be here later. We'll break it down. It is essentially a coin flip tonight. Panthers were showing with a couple cents in their favor at minus 112. But in reality, this is a coin flip tonight for all the marbles. Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals doesn't get better than that. Actually, it kind of does, because we have the College World Series deciding game tonight as well. Sucks that they're at the same time. Between Tennessee and Texas A&M. Matt Grissom will be here to talk about that game tonight. And then it's the NBA draft on Wednesday. So we have Vegas refund Luke Swain on the show today for not one but two segments breaking down the whole NBA draft. Give us his picks, the way he approaches the NBA draft, all of that later on the show with the great Luke Swain, who, as you know, has been on this show many times and primarily for the NFL draft where he's done great historically. But this time, obviously, for the NBA draft, which is only two nights away on Wednesday night. Mark Borchardt on baseball. We got to update. Oh, we got to update. Major League Baseball wins in the month of June. It's getting interesting for the third straight month.
How much do you enjoy this market? Because this is really the first time I've seen you really discuss this.
I love this market. Because, Wyatt, I was a baseball 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. If you asked me what my favorite sport to bet on was, it was baseball, and everything else was a distant second. The game changed. Starting pitchers got taken out of games earlier. My ability to wrap my arms around bullpens, not as good. And so I sort of day-to-day baseball betting sort of went by the wayside. I think that was a proper way to transition out. But I still think some of my best bets are in baseball. And this month-long sort of parameter is perfect. And also with the Guardians in March, April, with the Guardians in May, and now the Astros in June, I essentially just bet the team brain dead every day because I've already sort of done the month-long handicap. And while that doesn't sound like the most heady way to do things, it has proven to be awesome. So we'll update that coming up on the show. Wimbledon as well, because Drew Dinsick, Zach Cohen, I believe, will join us as well on Thursday to do a Wimbledon podcast on the Beating the Book side on Thursday. We'll talk men's side a little on the show today, because I ran through the numbers on some of the players. I hadn't gotten to the women's side yet, but we'll run through the men's. Let's start, though, with, I mean, is that enough? All of that going on. Here in the, and that's not even to mention soccer and all the your international soccer tournaments. Paul Carr will join us tomorrow. Let's talk about Scottie Scheffler because we got to make time for him first, just from a historical standpoint. Scottie Scheffler wins the Travelers yesterday in Connecticut in a playoff against Tom Kim. 18th hole interrupted by protesters. What were they protesting, by the way?
I think it was the Stop the Oil protest. I don't know. I was just enjoying Kelly live tweeting on the plane because he was trying to see the result before he took off. He was very frustrated.
In any protest, when you're interrupting sporting events or anything that anyone enjoys, you may want to consider that your protest is probably going to have the opposite effect. Just want to point that out to protesters.
I do enjoy when people get tackled. There are some amazing tackles out there.
Greatest tackle in protest history, Mike Curtis of the Baltimore Colts, before you and I can even remember, just decking a fan.
I might have to look this one
up. Back in the day. Okay, so Scotty Scheffler, 18th hole. Protesters, it gets delayed there, and so when they come back, Scheffler misses a birdie putt, barely settles for par, and then Tom Kim, to force a playoff, hits a clutch birdie putt. We're going to a playoff at the Travelers, and Scheffler sticks his approach shot on the green. Kim goes into the bunker. His chip out was nowhere close, and Scheffler ends up parring out to win the Travelers. It is his sixth PGA win in his last 10 starts. Sixth PGA win in his last 10 starts. 2 years ago, again, when Brady Cannon and I were on air, I said to him, I think we need to be Benny Scotty Scheffler every tournament. Like, he's built different. It took a while to manifest, but here we are with Scotty Scheffler. Sixth event of the year, not only in his last 10, but it's also, of course, the sixth of the year. And this is before July. Justin Ray, with all of his great tweets, this is the first time a golfer has won six tournaments before July since Arnold Palmer did it in 1962. It's only the third time that happened. I believe Arnold Palmer was a time before that as well. The all-time record, by the way, is 9 in a year, in a calendar year. Scheffler already at 6. Looking at history, Tiger Woods won 7 times in 2007. Tiger won 8 times in 1999 and 2006. And Tiger won 9 times in 2000. By the way, Arnold Palmer in 1962 and 1960. The only two other times that someone has won 6 by July. In fact, in 1962, he won 6 by the middle of May. But that's the record. Vijay Singh also won 9 times in 2004, by the way. But Tiger in 2009 is the record. But along those 6 wins, remember, it's just not rando tournaments, right? He won the Masters for the second time. He won the TPC, the Players Championship. He's also won $27.7 million, Scheffler, this year, roughly $15 million more than the next best competitor, Xander Schauffele. And his caddy, I believe, is just outside the top 10 in winning, in money earned, or right inside the top 10. That's how unbelievable Scheffler's season has been. And so you get to thinking, because I get to thinking, Wyatt, it's a problem of mine when I start thinking, 6 wins in 10 starts. Where does this rank? Like, in terms of the stretches of great golf that we have seen in our lifetime, where does this rank? Now, Greg Norman had a stretch between June of 1995 and April of 1997 where he was number 1 in the world for the entire stretch. At that point, he had been like number 1 in the world 300 plus times. But for that stretch of 2 years, he was number 1 the whole way through. And in those 2 years, largely considered to be one of the top 5 stretches in the history of golf, 2 years we're talking, he won 4 times on the PGA Tour, and then 3 times in the PGA Tour in Australia. So 4 here domestically, 3 in his native Australia for 7 in a 2-year span. Well, that's not as good as what Scheffler is doing now, and that's considered maybe the 3rd greatest stretch of all time. So the only 2 stretches of golf that are clearly better than this, because I'm going to make the case that this stretch we're seeing from Scotty Scheffler is firmly the 3rd best stretch of golf in the history, at least modern history of golf. The 2 best, and we'll do it number 2 to number 1, the 2 best are both Tiger Woods, who's just on a different level than anyone historically, Eldrick Tiger Woods. His 2nd best stretch, Tiger's, from June of 2005 to October of 2010, just to give this Scheffler stretch some context. Tiger spent 281 weeks as top-ranked golfer in the world. He won 29 times in that 5-year stretch, including 5 majors. It's just incredible. His best stretch, even better than that, August of 1999 to November of 2004, a stretch of golf that will probably never be matched, although Scotty's off to a start, I guess. 31 wins on tour, including 7 majors, 261 straight weeks as the top-ranked golfer in the world. That's the greatest of all time. He to finish 99, just to shorten it because we have Scheffler 6 out of 10, to finish 99 alone in that five-year stretch, Woods won 6 of 7 straight tournaments he entered. And for a period of time from the end of 99 through the middle of 2001, he won 5 of 6 straight majors. So great. So Scheffler, as amazing as this is, not quite the two greatest stretches of Tiger Woods' career. And by the way, Joe Pita, who wrote the 2019 tour guide for the Masters, also uncovered a unbelievable stretch within one of those. I can't remember which one of those Tiger Woods stretches this was involved in. Of, I want to say it was 82 or 86 rounds of golf in the row, rounds of golf in a row where Tiger was strokes gained plus, which is just, you know, head exploding. Tiger didn't even know he probably had that streak going. So Scheffler, what he's doing is, if you take Tiger aside, it might be the greatest stretch of golf. He is a short shot to win the Open Championship, the final major of the year, at 4-1 odds, plus 450 actually we're showing. But keep in mind, he's only won the two majors, which are the Masters, not only, but only in quotes, just to sort of give it perspective. Most people don't think a links course tailors to him, but nonetheless, installed, because you can't bet it unless it's installed, as a plus 450 short shot at the Open Championship, the final major of the year. He will not be participating in the Rocket Mortgage Classic this week, though Tom Kim, who he just beat in a playoff, is the short shot this week at Rocket Mortgage. Scottie Scheffler, man, tip of the cap. We'll come back. Baseball with Mark Borchardt. That's on the other side. Hockey, College World Series, NBA Draft is all on a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network. By DraftKings, live from Bar Canada at the D, downtown Las Vegas, with our NFL betting guide dropping this Thursday, 3 days away. It's never been a better time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Our all-new NFL betting guide is your secret weapon for the upcoming season. With in-depth profiles of every team, advanced stats, proven betting systems, betting trends, you'll have all the tools you need to bet this season smart. Plus, our experts share their top bets on season win totals, futures, and props, giving you the insights you need to get ahead of the action. To get the guide, you got to be a VSiN Pro subscriber, though. For a limited time, get an annual subscription to VSiN Pro at an unbeatable price, normally $240 a year. You can subscribe now for just $199. That's $199, pardon me, with promo code ANG. Plus, we'll throw in an extra month for free. That's 13 months of VSiN Pro access to everything we do, including our daily best bets, 24/7 video, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits data, and all our special edition betting guides to keep you betting smarter all year long. Do not miss out on our all-new NFL betting guide and this incredible offer. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe right now. Use promo code ANG to get 13 months of VSiN Pro for just $199.
That is ANG, Gil. ANG. I have an acronym. I'll use it next segment for that.
Reserve your copy of our all-new NFL betting guide. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. And to celebrate our VSiN football betting guide, our NFL betting guide, Thursday, heavy network-wide National Football League betting talk. Yes.
I'm excited for it.
Very excited.
It's that time of the year.
Oh, yeah.
You know why I like
it's
the
NFL? It's not quite that time of the year.
I know. But you know why I like the NFL season? Is because then the temperature starts to cool down. Because, boy, I tell you what, I hate these 150-degree days.
We get, oh, dude, it's already an oven outside. Oh. It's 7:15 a.m.
It was almost 90 degrees.
We get tweets at Beating the Book. Rockette Morton, middle of June, 1 week from today is July 1st. I do believe I corrected myself, right? Didn't I?
Yeah, I think so. You kind of.
My favorite thing is when you correct yourself and they still want to tweet you at you like this. Let's see. Hoops by Hoots. My favorite Scotty tweet I saw yesterday. Ricky Fowler in 12-year career. 6 PGA wins, 1 players, 0 majors. Scotty in last 100 days. 6 PGA wins, 1 players, 1 major. That is such a great way to contextualize it, too, because think about how desperately over the course of his career, people wanted to make Ricky Fowler into this massive thing. And how Scheffler's numbers just there just absolutely dwarf it. Trip Tepper, in 2001, Tiger held the title. This was a stretch we were talking about. In 2001, he said, another way to put it, Tiger held the title for all 4 majors and the Players, the unofficial 5th major, unlikely to be duplicated again. It really is unbelievable. Third best stretch of golf, I would argue, in our lifetime. Mark Borchardt joined us from an undisclosed location somewhere in the desert to talk some baseball with us at BaseWinner, basewinner.com. And, of course, he does the BetUS podcast. Comes to us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. And when I say undisclosed location, it's undisclosed for me. Where are you?
I'm laid back. Got my mind on my money and my money on my mind.
Heck, you know, it looks like I'm in the, it's like I'm in the Maricopa County Jail, but I'm really not. I'm going through a remodel of my home, which I think somebody else on this show is doing as well. So, like, I've got to kind of scramble to go to different places. But that remodel, that's sure fun, isn't it?
A remodel is fun. The smell of paint is fun. And there is this thing that people don't tell you, that you can play, you know, 2 hours of tennis out in 100-degree weather here in Vegas, and you will not be as tired or as sore. Your body won't be as sore as you will be moving boxes around your place or shredding paper. It is the weirdest thing in the world, and I haven't really solved that. Is because of the weight, you're not used to twisting your body in certain ways?
We have no idea. I never thought there'd be so many different variations of the color gray, though. I mean, it's just amazing.
It's like there are a lot of variations of gray, that's for sure. All right. Not at the Maricopa County Jail. We've established that. Good, because I would have had to ask you what you're in for. Let's start with your picks first. We usually wait till the end. What do you got today?
Well, I'm going to go, and I've been kind of bearish all year on Cleveland, but I really like this Bibee. He's seventh in about 100, and I think there's 147 guys today. I'm going to go first five Cleveland. He's going against not Maury Povich, but Cade Povich, and I've got the first five priced about minus 138. I still think you can get in the market about a pick 'em, so I'm going to go with that first five. And then, you know, Gil, when we were younger, somebody told us on the radio, and you're probably familiar with this since you were a DJ, that you don't fool around with the funky Cole Medina. But today I'm going to fool around with Medina versus Canning. They're both horrible pitchers. I think Medina's base winner ERA is like a 6.13, and the price is set at 8.5. I understand that the both teams' offenses aren't very good, but this is, you know, they always talk about good pitching versus good hitting. What happens? Well, this is what happens when bad hitting goes up against bad pitching. What I'm going to do here is play the over 8.5. I think that's priced affordably. I think it's about minus 115 right now. And then this is an interesting one, Gil. I have the White Sox, and the White Sox for me are I really want them to have the worst record in baseball, because I have them at 6-1. But today I'm going to play against the best team in baseball, arguably. I'm going to play the White Sox on the first five. I really like this Crochet, and he's actually has a base winner ERA of 2.21. It's pretty amazing that on such a crappy team, you can have such a good pitcher. And he's going up against Paxton. It was kind of conversely, on such a good team, you have such a crappy pitcher. And Paxton's base winner ERA, now this is strikeout percentage, walk percentage, ground ball percentage, and I think that there's no argument there that this is something the pitcher can control. And so anyway, Paxton's base winner ERA 5.89. I think we have a huge advantage pitching with the White Sox, and I understand their offense isn't good. I've got them 29th in baseball versus the fourth best offense in this respective split with the Dodgers. But all that being said, I think that a pick'em price for the White Sox is a steal. I think it should be about minus 200. And so that's controversial, but based on a 2.21 ERA versus a 5.89, it makes sense from a math standpoint, Gil.
Let's go. I mean, the All-Star break is coming up in a few weeks here. Always a nice time. By the way, Q2 derivatives pod, me and you next week, if you can hack it, because we're about to round the bend.
Let's do it. I'll be out of jail by then, I think.
I hope so. It was a misdemeanor. And so here's the thing. I just want to get a sort of heat check on some of these teams in each league to sort of get your thoughts on what is. We kind of have a good sense. I mean, there's not a lot of good races. Obviously, the AL East, 1.5 games separate the Yankees and the Orioles. But you have to, I mean, the only other one that is remotely close, I guess the closest of the bunch, is the Brewers are only 5 games up on the Cardinals. So you don't really have a lot of connectivity at the top. But in terms of the wild card, let's start with the American League. The National League is just a scrum. But the American League right now, if the playoffs were to begin today, and this just in, they're not. But if they were, Baltimore, Minnesota, and Boston inhabit the 1, 2, and 3 wild card positions. Kansas City is a half game out. Everybody else, including Tampa Bay and Houston, 4 games out or more. Ultimately, what do your numbers say will be a wild card team, because we can not only bet miss and make playoffs, but there's also some books that have exact seeding. So I'm curious what your numbers say in the AL.
Well, I'm really bearish on the Royals. In fact, I put that out. I think I got plus 160-ish on Friday, and I only have them with a 10% chance to make the playoffs based on my Monte Carlo simulation skill. So who's going to make it? Who's got the opportunity to get in there? I like Houston, Gil. I know you're in Houston. I've got them with a 61% chance of making the playoffs, and you can get them at DraftKings. I'm just looking now, plus 120. I think that's a pretty good opportunity in the American League, Gil.
I do too. Not as sexy a number as you could have gotten. It's certainly not as sexy a number before the month of June in terms of most wins. But yes, the Astros still four out of the wild card, and obviously they would have their sights set on a division as well. National League right now, the three wild cards would be Atlanta, St. Louis, and San Diego. But when I say Atlanta's got a little bit of a cushion, but St. Louis and San Diego in the 2 and 3 holes, you have to go 7 teams down from San Diego, and everybody's within 3 games. Washington, Arizona, the Mets, the Pirates, the Cubs, the Reds, and the Giants. Who's in ultimately and who's out, according to you?
Well, there's some really good opportunity for me, based on my numbers in the futures market, for the Padres to make the playoffs. Yes, I've got them a 70% chance, and you can still get them, I think, Gil. I mean, this looks like a typo, but you can get them at plus money, plus 140 for the Padres to get in there. And then there's the other team. I put this team out, too, on Friday, the Mets. And the Mets, 40% chance to get in. They're priced right now at plus 250. And that's based on the lineup they have right now. I think they'll probably get aggressive. I mean, they're right there, Gil. So those are two really good plays, in my opinion, in the National League, Gil.
And you always have to assess who's going to be a buyer, who's going to be a seller here at the trade deadline coming up as well. And then last thing, only 30 seconds, of all the teams we mentioned, which is the one, either American League or National League, that if they get in the postseason, the way that their starting pitching is set up, they could actually be a thing in advance?
Well, who have we mentioned? We've mentioned Houston. I didn't mention Baltimore winning that division to steal. But
really? Okay.
I don't know. I think it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be tough for all those teams because the other teams are better. They have better pitching. Gil.
Okay, but I heard Baltimore's going to win the AL East. You said that?
I love that. I think it's a steal, Gil.
Okay. Appreciate it. We'll come back. Wimbledon talk and, of course, the Stanley Cup Finals. Game 7 on the other side. Thank you, Mark. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Betting tools and betting guides. How often do you check odds by state, Wyatt? Are you like, I want to see what Tennessee's numbers are?
It won't allow me on this computer.
Oh, well, what's wrong with your computer?
You got to install something special.
VSiN.com. Check it out. The front page, NBA Draft with JVT. The NBA Draft is Wednesday night. Zachary Cohen. Zach Cohen also has NBA Draft thoughts. Steve Mackinnon with college football recruiting rankings. Matt Eumanns on college basketball futures. And, of course, a whole bunch of Stanley Cup Game 7 and College World Series. The decider tonight, Game 3 of the College World Series Finals. All at vsin.com. And on this show, in the next 90 minutes, we got nothing but College World Series, NHL, NBA Draft. We're doing all that. Oh, by the way, I have a couple, I forgot to give these out, a couple tennis plays. Did this start already? Let me see. All right, we had 3 today. Magda Linette was a winner overnight. I'm glad. Got there in time. So the last 2 tennis picks of the day, for those who are interested in having some action here this morning, I am on Junshen Shang, I believe you say that, Shang Juncheng on, this is in Eastbourne, this is a tune-up tournament to Wimbledon. Shang Juncheng, that's S-H-A-N-G, as we see it as the last name, which is actually the first, and J-U-N-C-H-E-N-G, or J-U-N-S-H-E-N-G, over, maybe you'll know this better by the opponent, over Tomas Martin Echeverry. I have Shang, and the number I got, again, all of our plays, speaking of the website, every host, every guest, every sport, all of our plays at vsin.com/picks. I got Shang last night at minus 122, and as I look right now, I want to see that it's not out of whack here for you. Maybe you'll have better, maybe you'll have a worse. We're doing this in real time, and right now you can get him at, oh, no, it's out. It's minus 154. I did that whole build-up, and now it's minus 154. Okay, there is, so I wouldn't play it at minus 154. So again, a bunch of CLV, we'll see where that goes. The other one I do have, I'm sure that you will be able to play this one. I have, and again, this is at VSiN.com/picks. I want to get, this is also an Eastbourne on the ladies' side. I have Barbara Krejcikova. Oh, Barbara Krejcikova, this is absolutely playable. She is at plus 111 right now. And I got her plus 114, so it really hasn't moved that much. So Krejcikova on the ladies' side over Cutie Pie Lila Fernandez, the Canadian. So we're taking Krejcikova. Hopefully her lifetime grass numbers manifest in that one as a slight dog. Those are the two remaining tennis plays of the day for those who are interested. Speaking of tennis, you have Wimbledon fever, Wyatt? Be honest.
Excited for you. I'm excited for you.
Excited for me.
Hey, can I ask a quick question?
Sure, but Dustin was here on Friday, and he was like, Dustin, are you into tennis? He goes, no, I only like real sports, Gil. That's what he said to me. Brutal.
Wow.
Brutality.
I'm guessing Dustin is not well, is not going to be invited back on the show for
one
a
and done,
bit.
Sweetelson. No, I loved hanging out with Dustin.
But I was going to ask, you know, out of the four majors, is Wimbledon like the prestigious tournament?
Yes.
Kind of like the Masters for golf?
I think so. I think that if, even to this day, that if someone asked, what's the most, to use your word, I think you have to use that word though, right? Mm-hmm. Prestigious. It's still Wimbledon because it's the all whites on the grass, breakfast at Wimbledon, the fortnight, all the tradition that goes with, you know, the absolute, you know, royalty sitting in the box in their royal regalia, however you want to say that. Yeah, so I think it's the most prestigious. Is it the most, you know, valued in terms of, like, does it have more, you know, I think the Masters, in addition to being the most prestigious, I think the Masters, to a lot of people, still is a leg up on the others in terms of which is the most meaningful of all of them. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe some people think it's the U.S. Open. Maybe some people overseas think it's the Open Championship. I don't think Wimbledon holds it in that way, if I'm making sense. Prestigious, yes, but, like, I don't know. You go to the U.S. Open, that raucous crowd, winning that is pretty spectacular. The French is its own thing on clay, so it's a little different in tennis.
Which one would be kind of your bucket list to go to?
Oh, yeah, I hit it, but I didn't have, like, good enough seats. I went to the U.S. Open about 9, 10, 11 years ago. I can't remember exactly what year it was. At night. Night matches at the U.S. Open because you're allowed to emote. You're allowed to go crazy. And I saw a Sloane Stephens Anna Ivanovic match, which I think Ivanovic won. But I also attended, just randomly, a Marty Fish Gilles Simone match. And you're like, who cares if you saw Marty Fish Gilles Simone? But there's a documentary on Netflix, one of these untold, I don't know what it's, I think it's Untold or a series of strange sports documentaries. Marty Fish had a mental breakdown during that match, and I had no idea. And there's a whole documentary about the one match, one of two, that I attended in my whole life at US Open. But I would love to go with actual, like, great seats on top of it. Indian Wells is the best experience I've had in terms of, like, having great seats for something, which is tennis is de facto fifth major. But, yeah, US Open bucket list. But I want to go to all of them, man. I want to go to Wimbledon. I want to go to the French. We should all be so lucky. Matt Brown just went to the French.
Did he?
Yeah, man. Matt Brown is styling and profiling at the French.
Oh, man. I need to become friends with him.
He was maxing and relaxing. You name it, he was doing it. Is that good 90s cliches that I'm using?
I like it.
All right. Wimbledon. I didn't get a chance to delve into the numbers on the women's side, but I did on the men's side a little bit last night. And just know that this is about grass. There's hard courts. There's a gradation of hard courts. There's clay. There's a gradation of clay in terms of faster or slower. Grass is the fastest of all of them. But grass season, the sort of trouble with handicapping grass season is there's the least amount of data. The entire grass season lasts 5 weeks. There's literally three tune-up tournaments on the men's and women's side, and then it's Wimbledon, and then we're done. And this year we're done. We're, you know, some are headed to the Olympics to play on clay, like Iga is on the ladies' side, and then some are just going to go straight into hard courts for the rest of the season, the rest of the calendar year. So grass, because it's only 5 weeks every year, the data isn't as meaningful as it is for hard courts, which is the most robust, or clay. So you try to make the most of it. And on the men's side, the first thing you have to know is Novak Djokovic has not made an official announcement. Remember, he tore the meniscus in his knee in the French Open, and he had to withdraw. You remember after, I believe it was advanced to the semifinals. He has still not fully decided if he's playing at Wimbledon or not. So that's the very first thing you know. So he's still listed in the odds. He's the third shot behind Carlitos. Carlos Alcaraz is plus 150. Yannick Sinner's plus 175. They are the future of men's tennis. Those two should be winning majors left and right for the you know, near future and far future. But Novak, looking for that record, you know, another any major he wins is another record breaker. He's at plus 350, so he's been training. He looks actually much better on his knee than you would otherwise think he would have this close to his injury. So we don't know if he's playing or not. That's the first thing. Second thing is, when you go into this stuff, you usually care about the draw. At Wimbledon, I would argue, the draw means sort of the least. Because, again, we don't have as much to go on, so we're not really sure, well, if this player plays this player. We have a much better sense of that on hard courts and draws in not only the majors but all tournaments. As far as, though, looking at the numbers we do have and the performances we have seen here in the recent weeks on grass, well, let me just go through a few of those. On the men's side, what we have seen so far leading up to Wimbledon is some names popping up, in some cases, a couple times. So Stuttgart, which was a 250. There are 250s, there's 500s, and there's 1,000s, and then there's the majors. 250s is the lowest. There's 125s, but we don't worry about that. 250 in Stuttgart. Jack Draper beat Matteo Berrettini in the finals. Musetti and Nakashima got to the semis. In the Netherlands, also a 250, De Minaur beat Korda. Umber and Griekspoor got to the semis. And then the two 500s in London, Tommy Paul just beat Musetti. Musetti has come up twice now. Korda and Thompson got to the semis. Korda has come up twice now. And then in Halle, just on a 500, Sinner beat Orkatz. Zhang Zhizhen and Sasha Zverev got to the semifinals. Now, that may sound like a word salad, but what it means is, okay, Draper, Berrettini, Musetti, Korda. What are their numbers? When you look at the outrights, do you think any of them can win at all? I would argue no. But for individual matches, I think those are names to think about. As far as looking at the data and say, okay, whose data is shockingly great on grass, not only this year but also in past years? The answer to that question would be Grigor Dimitrov. Grigor Dimitrov actually has better raw grass numbers than anyone on tour. And what are we seeing him at to win this tournament? I think 40-1-ish in that range. Might you take a flyer on him? It would be an interesting one to have, and then you could earn on it if he advances deep, deep into the tournament. So that's, if you're looking for a clever play, I think it's Dimitrov. I think Matteo Berrettini, who has had great success here in the past and is a bit of a serve bot, at 20-1 is an interesting one to have. And then Milos Raonic, if you wanted some crazy long shot at 100-1, he is the serve bot of all serve bots. If he somehow got on this two-week serve streak that no one could return, again, same thing with him and Berrettini. If they got far enough, you could earn on it. So do I think any of those three, Dimitrov, Berrettini, or Raonic, end up winning the tournament? I do not. But they might be interesting futures to have in your pocket in the hopes that one of them gets very deep into it. Ultimately, though, I think it's Carlitos, Yannick, or Novak Djokovic, and I'd be lying to you if I thought anybody else. Uber or Kotz, if you said that, I wouldn't go nuts on you either, as a bit of a serve bot himself. We'll come back. Stanley Cup, Game 7, tonight. Jay Khan next. NFL training camp starting in less than a month. The VSiN experts have been hard at work to get you ready for the upcoming NFL season. The law firm of Humans Burke & Company have done a great job with this. Our all-new VSiN NFL betting guide drops this Thursday's pack with everything you need to dominate this NFL season. We got in-depth profiles of every team, advanced stats, proven betting systems, proprietary betting trends that you won't find anywhere else. But that is not all, Wyatt. Just making sure you're paying attention. Our experts have weighed in with their best bets on season win totals, futures, and props. Whether you're a season better or just getting started, our NFL betting guide is your ticket to smarter, more informed bets. And to celebrate the release of the guide once again, VSiN's going all out with special coverage throughout the day on Thursday. Tune in Thursday for expert analysis, insider tips, and all the NFL insight you need to start the season strong. Remember, the only way to get our all-new NFL betting guide is to become a VSiN Pro subscriber, though. So visit VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today.
Sorry, Gil. I was just focusing about the two greatest words in sports. Game 7.
Game 7. Before we get to Game 7, Jay Hahn, by the way, joins us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at jhahn4. That's H-A-H-N and the number 4. He is the co-host of The Point, the Fantasy Hockey Show on Sirius XM NHL. Jake, how you doing? And before we talk Game 7, you had Tom Kim pre-flop at the Travelers?
Yeah, like you guys said, no better words than Game 7, and we will certainly get into that. And I think the whole sports world, especially the hockey world, excited for the game tonight. But I am mourning the loss of my Tom Kim outright ticket, Gil. It was it was tough. And to be the leader after the first round, the second round, the third round, but not the round that ultimately matters in the outright market, that's as frustrating as it gets when it comes down to it. But hey, when you lose to the best golfer in the world, you just got to tip your cap and say, I made a decent bet. It just didn't end up cashing. So we'll go back to the drawing board for the Rocket Mortgage this week.
Yeah, that fourth and final round can be pretty pesky sometimes. I understand. All right. Game 7. We have behind Wyatt, we have a bunch of screens. And a lot of them are tuned into the NHL Network here at the D. And the graphic said, most anticipated game of this century. Like, this is what we're talking about here. I get it. We're only less than a quarter of the way through the century, but you get the idea. So let's go through all the things first, and then we'll get your opinion on a whole bunch of stuff. Edmonton trying to become, as we said, not only the fifth team to come back from a 3-0 deficit in a best of seven in the history of the NHL playoffs, the NHL playoff series, but also trying to be the second team to do so in a Stanley Cup final. They have already become only the third team in history to force a Game 7 in the Stanley Cup Finals after trailing 3-0. The 42 Maple Leafs, which actually pulled off the ultimate comeback in the Finals, and the 45 Red Wings that didn't, being the others. They're also trying to be the first Canadian team to win the Stanley Cup since 1993 when the Canadiens did it. And this is just the 18th time in the history of the NHL where a Game 7 will determine the Stanley Cup Finals. Wait, Jake, there's more. But before we get to the more of that, I just want to get your thoughts here on a couple things. One, what do you think changed? Let's stop there. Besides the obvious one, which is Sergei Bobrovsky, who has allowed 14 of 64 goals for a save percentage of .748. Oh, my God, in the last 10 periods. Beyond that little detail, what's fundamentally changed? Is Florida gassed?
Well, I do think you hit on the obvious one, right? Sergei Bobrovsky, maybe a flip in the goaltending between the two goaltenders. You got to give some credit to Stuart Skinner on the other end as well, who a lot of people doubted going into the series, myself included, saying, you know, Florida would have the edge. There's a lot of areas where both teams are equal, but I feel like the one that felt obvious was the edge between the pipes because Bobrovsky had the experience. He was in a cup final last year. Stuart Skinner, unfamiliar territory, and early in the series, that experience was showing for Bobrovsky, and I think that has now flipped the other direction, and Stuart Skinner's actually making the big saves. But other than that, I think Edmonton just sticking with what they were doing. I know they were down 3-0 in this series, guys, but there was elements of their game that they were still playing well, and obviously Bobrovsky was great and kind of stifling them a little bit, but they stuck with it. And I really do think it came down to that Game 5, right? They blow out Florida in Edmonton in Game 4 to kind of extend the series, and that Game 5 to me was a total hinge game. It was either Florida wraps it up in 5 or Edmonton wins, carries it back to Edmonton, and I felt like we were always going to go 7. So I think at the end of the day, Edmonton's played a great series, even from the get-go, even when they lost a couple of those early games, and just sticking with what they were doing, trusting in what they've done all season long is the reason why they've been able to push this to Game 7.
But just to be clear, nobody, including yourself, nobody saw it after Game 3, right? Like, there was nobody saying this could happen.
I don't think so. Yeah. I'm sure there's some tickets out there for some ambitious bettors, and good luck to those bettors tonight if you got a decent number. I certainly wasn't one of those people, Gil. I felt like Florida was going to win it on home ice in 5, and I do think the pressure of playing on home ice can get the team sometimes, and I think that's something to look out for tonight. If we think there was a lot of pressure on Florida in Game 5, knowing, okay, we need to wrap this up, we don't want to go back to Edmonton, imagine the pressure on that Panthers team tonight in a Game 7, having 3 chances already to win a Stanley Cup with the cup in the building, now having to do it on home ice, it almost feels like that's even more difficult than doing it on the road.
Yeah, by the way, I misspoke earlier. I think Bobrovsky, after the last 64 shots on goal, he's allowed 14 for .748. What I meant over the last 10 periods was the Oilers have outscored the Panthers 20-5. 20 goals in the last, obviously some were empty netters, but 20-5 over the last 10 periods. You like Edmonton tonight? Is that what I'm hearing?
I do, Gil, and I've been pro Florida this entire series. And look, I hope this is a close game. I hope we get a classic. Overtime would be amazing, just from a pure drama perspective. Imagine the pressure on both teams.
Only been two overtimes in Game 7 Stanley Cup Finals history: 1954, 1950, both by Detroit, both won by Detroit.
And we haven't even had many Game 7s at all lately in recent memory in the Stanley Cup Final, right? Actually, Boston's been involved in the most recent two. They faced Vancouver in Game 7 over 10 years ago, won that, and then they lost to the Blues in Game 7 recently. We've actually had a lot of boring Cup Finals, to be completely honest, lately, where one team is just either clearly better than the other team, like we saw with Tampa Bay and Montreal a few years ago, or you know, you have a team that just gets gassed out or injured, like we saw what happened to the Panthers last year against the Vegas Golden Knights. So it's nice that we have a classic. I'm rooting for a close game here, guys, but it's hard not to side with Edmonton the way that they're playing right now. I backed Edmonton on Friday night. Obviously, now they go out on the road, but you can say that, you know, that might actually be a little bit easier for a team to play on the road and maybe not have quite as much pressure. Now I talk about pressure on Florida, and there's obviously tons when you're this close to blowing a 3-0 lead, but there is now pressure on Edmonton as well. You don't come all this way back from 3-0 down and not have any pressure on you with the cup in the building. So pressure on both sides tonight, and I'm looking forward to seeing who steps up.
Where would this, Wyatt asked this off air, so I want to ask it on air. Where would this rank in all-time gacks for you? Not only hockey, but sports.
It's tough, guys. Like I know, and maybe you could speak to some of the other sports a little bit better. The Falcons Patriots Super Bowl comes to mind as one where I was just like, oh man, I think we all kind of remember that one. And you know, you can look at a lot of different comebacks. You look at the Red Sox coming back against the Yankees and series like that that kind of jump out. But I think in a cup final like this, if Florida loses with the 3-0 lead, this might go down as the all-time gag, at least in NHL history. There, I'm sure if we dig deep enough, we can find something in pro sports. And Gil, we're both golf guys here as well. I'm sure there's been plenty of gags in golf history as well down the stretch. But in terms of a team sport, this one might be number one.
Yeah, Greg Norman, 6-shot lead at the Masters. I think it was 1990. But the Red Sox-Yankees 2004 AL Championship Series is what leaps to mind for me. Just a few more things here. I was wondering, okay, scoring first means so much. What's the history of Game 7s? The team that scores first has won 12 of the previous 17 situations where it's a team coming back from a 3-0 deficit. The team that scores first has won 12 of 17. That falls in line kind of with how this series has gone, right? Because the team that has opened scored first has won 5 of 6 games in this series. Only Florida's win in Game 2 bucking that. Home team, 12-5 in these Game 7s where a team has come back from a 3-0 deficit. But the last 3 times it's happened, the road team has won. So you got to, for whatever that's worth. The team that won Game 6 to extend the series has only gone 8-9 in Game 7. So Edmonton is not a proverbial lock by that trend. We're not really a trend show. But so keep all those numbers in mind. The scoring first thing is interesting. 12 out of 17. Last thing here. Conor McGregor, 18-1 to win the Conn Smythe when the Oilers were down 3-0. Plus 650 when they were down 3-1. Now he's minus 2,500 or like minus 3,000. What would have to happen, win or lose? Give me a scenario where he does not win this.
It's a great question, and it's hard to find that scenario because I do think no matter what happens tonight, Connor McDavid is getting that Conn Smythe trophy. It'll be a little awkward if they lose because we just haven't seen this in a very long time since J.S. Jaguar in 2003. So we're going way back to find the last time a losing player won a Conn Smythe trophy. But I think he has it locked up, guys. I've talked to a few people that do have votes on this award as well, and it does feel like everybody's in agreement that it should go to Connor McDavid for the playoffs that he's had. If I'm building a case, I'd say a Bobrovsky, 40 save shutout, something like that, to win the cup, or maybe a Barkov hat trick. Something of that would have to happen, and I even think with that it might not be enough to usurp Connor McDavid.
Connor McDavid, 2 own goals. That's the only way. Put in his own net by accident. Trying to be the 6th player of all time to win the Conn Smythe on the losing team, but win or lose, it looks like it's his. Jake, enjoy. This is gonna be awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, enjoy the game tonight, guys. Take care.